SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Just thumbing through some of Saturday and Friday PPs because your Arkansas Derby Day card drawn yesterday. And, you know, when a racing office says, six to eight. They're hoping for eight, but they got six. And the Arkansas Derby, really very unusual what transpired here. And we'll talk to Hammer, obviously, Friday, and probably Mary Rampolini as well. The early post Rebel runners were fairly obvious. With Concert Tour and Hozier and knew that Caddo River was, you know, going to come back and Superstock pretty quickly was confirmed, but it just didn't build from there. They're either a lack of candidates or nobody was interested necessarily in invading. And I mean, I didn't go through the charts, but I can't remember. It was a million-dollar race and a grade one. And it just a little surprising that a couple more, granted, we've run the majority of them, and there just might not be any other, really viable types that were willing to, past the entry box. I mean, not that it's a huge investment to sign on for, the series in Arkansas. And in fact, the early nomination, 750, and that nominates you for everything in the sequence from the Smarty Jones, the Southwest, the Rebel, and the Arkansas Derby. Ron Moquette is going to join us later. Maybe Ron will have a little bit of perspective on where the, where the candidates went to. Concert Tour is going to be, prohibitive favorite off the Rebel win. Yet another, I hadn't even thought about this, but yet another of the three-year-olds that, with success on Saturday, would arrive at Churchill undefeated, a fourth start. And, of course, Joel Rosario, who, finds himself on literally the best runners seemingly on a daily basis and weekly basis with the, the classic run-up. This is the last stop on the on the review the review panel of candidates when it comes to what Ron Anderson and Joel are evaluating. But boy, it has been it's been pretty heady, let's face it, for Rosario. And this seemingly is his number one Derby mount. So here it is, Superstock. And as I mentioned yesterday, I think I gave the numbers. In fact, let me reach for that so that I've got it at hand. But Superstock with 9 or 10. Superstock with 9 points. So a third place finish, 29, would, put him, right at the cusp. Put him in the low 20s and having to wait for defections. A second place finish would get him in the Derby. Caddo River is in about the same shape, 10 points. So, 20 puts him on the cusp, and 40 would get him in to Derby. So they line up next to each other. Ricardo Santana back aboard, actually, because Talamo had ridden Superstock in the Rebel. Before that, in the street sense, actually, at the end of the two-year-old season was the last time Santana, and really the only time, actually, because you'll recall that that Keith Asmussen was riding Superstock at the beginning. So Superstock on the rail, Caddo River, and you heard yesterday from Brad Cox how they're going to approach this. There will not be any rating considered for Caddo River. Now, one thing that I was thinking about in that conversation with Brad yesterday, and even knowing that it was going to be a small field, the importance of the draw for where Caddo River and Concert Tour were going to line up. And in fact, with Caddo River drawing the two and drawing inside of Concert Tour, who's in the five hole, that edge, that advantage goes to Concert Tour, who can, certainly based on the San Vicente, showed that at that time that he could sit off horses. So I would imagine that Rosario, keeps Caddo River in close sight and attacks when appropriate and when he thinks the time is right. So Superstock on the rail, Caddo River in the two. Hozier, who's kind of a Hozier is kind of a forgotten entity to some degree. I don't hear anybody really discussing him. And the Pioneer of the Nile colt, bred by Windstar, and it has the agglomeration of ownership that includes SF and Starlight and Sal Cumin and Jason Monteleone, the Mattaket team, Stone Street's involved. Golconda is in here. Sienna Farm is a partner, and Bat Masterson involved. So it's there's a whole host of Hozier ownership, and he's done very little. What can you say about him? I mean, other than the maiden win, and then the surprising and strong performance behind Concert Tour. So he comes in here, and Martin Garcia rides back. He and Baffert back together again, and coming off of a pair of bullets, two of his last three works. Bullets at Santa Anita, and he draws the three. Get Her Number did enter for Gary Barber and Peter Miller, and it disappointed to some degree in the Rebel, mid pack and chasing the whole way around. But it was his first race back in 5 months. Got to acknowledge that he was a Grade One winner. He won the American Pharoah, beat Ron Bauer and Spielberg in there, among others. So, Get Her Number is traveling, a tick under the radar, to be honest. And, he's a horse that did attend pace and was part of the pace picture in his two-year-old races. He broke his maiden turf sprinting, got overhauled late in the Del Mar Juvenile Turf, and then won the American Pharoah in his dirt debut. He's a dialed in out of a Bernstein mare, bred by Phil and Brenda Robertson, and was an absolute bargain in the scheme of things, a $45,000 OBS April purchase. Pretty cool. So Get Her Number, and then Concert Tour with Rosario and the West, homebred. And, Sid's going to be on in a little bit next hour. So we'll talk to Sid. Maybe he's got a thought or two. You know, we talked about Concert Tour after the Rebel. And then Last Samurai, as we mentioned, coming out of the Southwest. And, you know, Dallas with a late runner, it would seem. So, a second start off the 2-3 break. And a horse like this can make, and same with Get Her Number, can make major strides. Don't kid yourself. That's significant. I mean, Superstock, frankly, as well. What's wrong with Superstock? So we just have six, but you know what? These are all horses with either, you know, stakes credentials or stakes experience. You know, you do have, you know, you got Get Her Numbers, a grade one winner. Caddo River is a stake winner. Superstock is grade one placed, the Breeders' Futurity, last year. So, you know, the Hozier and Concert Tour, you got a grade two winner in Concert Tour. You know what? Clean your glasses. This is not a bad group, really. Would you like to have 10? Yeah, you would. You would. It would. You know, the mix of styles and pace and so forth. But you do have, you know, you do have at least two that are going to be forward. I'm going to guess that that Miller's instructions to Arietta for Get Her Number will be to, you know, be involved in the pace. You know, so maybe Rosario lets Get Her Number and Caddo River mix it up, and Concert Tour gets an opportunity to show some self-control and you know, maybe get a lesson toward Derby. So the rest of the Arkansas Derby day came up nice. There's lots of fun action to talk about over the next couple of days, and we'll dig into handicapping, of course, tomorrow. But you have, you know, things like the carousel, the Fillies and Mares going three quarters, and actually a group of six in here as well, a very accomplished group. Edgeway is back, and didn't even bring this one up. Had forgotten about Edgeway. Brings this one back, and you'll recall that last winter, Edgeway was okay at Oaklawn. Casual, kind of a personal favorite, the Curlin Filly out of Lady Tack for Hill and Dale. And this is a Sakura project and product, you know, coming back out of the Spring Fever where she chased Kamari home. Wild Woods Beauty in here for Scott Becker and Mr. Stirrett's. Frank's Rockette comes back. You know, she won the American Beauty, you'll recall, if you go back to January. And Michael Pewich has got a participant in here, Macho Amour, and Robert Klein with Best Kept Secret. But Edgeway Casual, Frank's Rockette, Wildwood Beauty, the principals. There's good maiden races involved, some good allowance action, some nice big full fields there. The Oaklawn Mile. With a, literally, a gathering of all the usual suspects. By My Standards, Pioneer Spirit, Blackberry Wine, Wells Bayou, back for Brad Cox. Rushy, how about Rushy making the four-year-old debut? There's a horse that you forgot about. Joel Rosario, who won an allowance on Rushy last year. This is for the Danielles and Michael W., McCarthy. Very nice. And Cox has got one for Shortleaf for John Ed Anthony. John Ed Anthony's got a handful. It's going to be a fun day, hopefully, for him. The Sound, a heart-spun four-year-old making the stakes debut. The Oaklawn Mile came up very, very nice. And then, of course, there's the Count Fleet. And even though I'm getting we're getting Ron Moquette on for a different reason, obviously, we'll talk, you know, Whitmore. There's every chance that we talk to Ron next week, too. But the Count Fleet, which seems to always be engaging, Whitmore comes back again. And, of course, you know, comes off a title defense in this. And No Parole showed up. How about this? No Parole showed up. and drew the rail. So he's Ramon Vasquez gets aboard. And so he's going to have to go, which is no, I think he would have gone to him, obviously, no matter where he drew. But he's the inside speed, but he's not alone on the speed front because Empire Gold, a horse we really took a shine to going into Breeders' Cup, he makes his four-year-old debut. This is the Terry Off Golden Sense colt that ran a terrific race at 50-1. In the Breeders' Cup, and was your leader into deep stretch, and kind of needed him to at least hold on for third, and just couldn't do it. Ended up fourth, so got the last major check in the Breeders' Cup sprint. But a really, you know, we talked to Terry Off leading into Breeders' Cup, so it's good to see him back. CZ Rocket, you know, who continues, you know, ever since the decision to stick to sprinting with him off the claim, that has been the secret, and he's absolutely responded to that. Just a series of solid, you know, not spectacular, but very, very solid over and over again. And then, you know, he's parlayed it into, you know, a placement in the Breeders' Cup sprint. He's a gelding, but he really won the Hot Springs. You recall the Pat O'Brien and the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. You know, lots of mid-90 buyers, 95, 96, 97, 97, 97, 98. He's been terrific, confined to sprinting. Good old Mr. Jägermeister in here as well. Strike Power, too, who you might want to take a look. Third off the layoff, seasonal, six-year-old, of course, for Don Adam, in the hands of Steve Asmussen, won a rich allowance preparing for this. So the count fleet comes up like it seemingly always does. I should mention, Jimmy DeVito's got Mojo Man in here, too. And actually, Jimmy DeVito has got a couple of horses that kind of caught my eye as I thumbed through races 3 through, I think it's a 13-race card. That name rejected a Munnings that actually Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson bred. Name rejected for Double Down off the maiden win. And DeVito taking his time with Name Rejected. That's a colt that just keeps getting better. And he caught my eye early in the Oaklawn season. Jimmy DeVito is sharp and does a great job. So the overall slate, but you know, between Keeneland Saturday and what's going on there and Oaklawn, we're going to have another very fun spring Saturday. And I guess I should also mention they put together the Maker's Mark Mile as well for Friday. And of course, we're racing at Keeneland today. Both Gus and I looked at it too. I got a crazy horse I'll tell you about at some point. A quick look at the Maker's Mark. Hits the road and shows up here for Dan Blacker. And of course, the streaking 4-year-old by More Than Ready. He comes in looking for another grade one success off the Kilroe win. Chad laying in wait with Peter Brandt, Raging Bull, the now 6-year-old making his seasonal debut. Maker's got Field Pass in here for Three Diamonds, and Rosario gets aboard. That horse that Brad Cox mentioned yesterday, Durain, for Qatar Racing, and Watership Down. Chad's also got Sacred Life, making a seasonal debut, now 6. Jack Sisterson with Calumet's Homebred English Channel out of Padmore, and we kind of like Flying Scotsman, if for no other reason than Padmore. I want to say Padmore was a Satish product. So Ride a Comet in here too for Cassie and Jack Oxley and Len Riggio. There's Appealing Zofie, by the way, who came up. Speaking of which, right? You know, talking about the horse yesterday with John Enos out of a daughter of Appealing Zofie. So closely related. That was fun with John yesterday. I was glad to be able to showcase what he and boy, he was talking. He seems very pleased with what he's got coming up today and tomorrow at Keeneland. So there's the Maker's Mark. They're also going to run a little stake, the Limestone Turf Turf Sprint, as part of the Saturday card, Friday card, excuse me. And we'll look forward to the big Jenny Wiley slate today. So there you go. There's what went on yesterday, and I waded right in. I was kind of eager to pull up some PPs. A couple of pieces of news and a quick rundown, too. Sid, we told you about, and I mentioned Ron Moquette and, of course, Seth Merrill later. Pete's guy, told you yesterday late. Pete, going to get Pete Fortitel. We haven't talked to Pete in at least 6 weeks, so we'll get Pete in. He's got some fun things doing. He's got a fun Breeders' Cup betting challenge contest that came to light late last week. So we'll tell you about that and everything else that is going on. And I'm missing something. Oh, I think Mike Weiss out in Arizona is going to join us because there was the news last week about rebooting the racing at Arizona Downs. And Mike Weiss, of course, who handled and kept Rieto going with the help of the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program kids. Shouldn't call them kids because some of them are, you know, some of them are full-fledged adults. They're not just undergrads. So we'll talk to Mike and see what's brewing there. The Arizona situation continues to be, between the signal battle that just doesn't seem to get resolved and the situation between Turf Paradise and Arizona Downs and so on. So wanted to get Mike in here for some clarification, and we may have a surprise that's been a couple of days in the making ever since it came up with Rich Migliori. And I don't mean the sauce and gravy. So we'll see. I don't know if we can get that taken. And I told you Ron Moquette as well. So, you know what, Case, let's get Pete in. We'll get started that way. And as Casey reaches for Pete, let me, I want to draw attention to something I tweeted yesterday. And I don't know if you saw, Mike McAdam in the Schenectady Gazette, and McAdam basically outlined, he had conversations between NYRA and the state officials, and essentially McAdam was looking to get a handle on Saratoga, essentially, and what we can ideally anticipate. And if you read between the lines in this, the title is "Looking Forward to Fans Back at the Spa," and while I think we all expect and know that there'll be some percentage of of the building and of the backyard inhabited, the system, NYRA working on the system and are ready to put together whatever protocols are going to be necessary. And obviously we're watching other, around the country, you can see the various mechanisms in terms of, sort of lottery concepts or, phoning in and making reservations to attend the races, et cetera. Now, NYRA has the advantage of time on its side, even more so, of course, given what's happening with vaccination rollout, particularly in New York. I mean, I've said this a few times. I know some states and some people are been frustrated in the delays in getting vaccinated, but in New York has been, it's been liberal, in terms of the availability. And in fact, I keep, you know, once I signed up, you keep getting these emails advising you that there's, you know, there's a vaccination event, which, you know, which is better than a gender reveal party. So McAdam went, you know, got comments from Pat McKenna. And Naira, you know, Naira's just being held hostage, is the way I termed it, by the state. You know, the state let the Yankees and Mets execute a program for attendance, and they're, you know, they're just making Naira tread water here, as to, you know, throwing the switch. So. They, our friend Chris McDonald had a funny response to my tweet, which was based on hotel prices. he thinks things look pretty good because he obviously has tried to make some reservations to come to town. So and certainly, you know, well, Pete doesn't have to make reservations because he's got a house here. So Pete, maybe you're taking reservations for people to come visit. Pete Mornatel joins us. Good morning.
Good morning to you, my friend. Yes, we have the finished garage adjacent to the little house on the east side that we affectionately call the degenerate flop house. A few have made inquiries already. I've been encouraging people, thinking that we should be okay come this July and August. But I do like that idea of, you know, I'm just going to Belmont, too. So that sure would be nice if we can get out there sooner later.
Yeah, and you know, I keep promising Pat to come and advise us, but I don't think he's got much more to say than the quotes that you're seeing on a regular basis, including in this Mike McAdam piece. So Naira is there's not a lot I don't think they can say, frankly, in terms of expressing their frustration, but you know, having fans at the stadium, seeing fans at the stadium and at Shea, and I'm going to continue to call City Field Shea. I'm sorry. But,
I wasn't going to call you on it. I was happy enough with it.
Well, I guess I could have called it the Polo Grounds, but I'm not going to go that far back.
It could be worse, though, Steve. It could be what's going on up in Toronto, which to me just defies all logic with the politicos, hoping that we can pull a rabbit out of a hat and somehow get that beat started on time. I mean, I want to have fans back in New York. It's going to happen. It sure sounds like I think a little more patience is required. And for me, the date that I would riot at if we're not back to something reasonable would be the beginning of Saratoga. But hopefully it'll be before that.
You'd have to think. So have you had your series?
The vaccine?
Yeah.
I have gotten both. I have gotten both. I am good with that, and so happy to have that behind me rather than in front of me.
Yeah.
It's really just a tremendous, tremendous relief. It was honestly it was my most pleasant interaction in many ways, I would say, with both doctor's offices and government. It was incredibly efficient for me. I think New York in the city here, they've done a really tremendous job with that. And hopefully, you know, the more people can get them, the quicker we can all get back to these great sporting venues in a more fully fleshed out way.
Well, did you get to go to Aqueduct or Belmont for the shot?
I didn't. I went to. I was able to go within half a mile of my house to Medford
Emory
College.
So nice.
I took that option. But yeah, I was sort of low key envious of people who got to go to the racetracks.
I know something fun to, you know, for the rest forever to be able to say, oh, I got vaccinated at Aqueduct
op. I was definitely envious of that photo op. With the card and the structure in the background.
exactly. Well, let's dive in, and we'll save that because, you know, ideally it's going to be a wonderful summer that people will, you know, be able to make you know, return trips and those that have got, you know, a history of convening with friends from all over the country in some cases and relatives, et cetera, and backyard celebration and so forth. We'll keep that, keep that finger crossed. In the meantime, there's been plenty of, you know, wading back into action, whether it was at Santa Anita and certainly Keeneland on Saturday.
That was fantastic to be able to be back at Keeneland. You know, obviously we were there for Breeders' Cup, but it was a little more it was a lot more guarded, I'd say. This felt like being at Keeneland and having turned the corner. You know, it wasn't exactly like old Keeneland, but it was a lot closer than Breeders' Cup. The weather was great, and the vibes were good, and the racing was great, and a couple of just unbelievable, exciting finishes to get the blood pumping. And it was definitely the most relaxed I felt in a long time. It was one of those weekends, Steve, everything but the betting. Everything was great except the fact that I couldn't seem to put anything together to return any money into the coffers. But that happens, and it paled in comparison to the excellent feeling of just being at one of the greatest racing venues in the world for a couple of terrific days of sport.
Well, and that it's funny, that seemed to be a common theme, that the highest profile venues, I mean, other than the, you know, the improbable, you know, Bourbonnais in the wood, other than that, even that is not a mainstream, you know, betting opportunity. You know, it's not a middle priced long shot that, you know, that somebody latched onto. Frankly, the Pletcher Dynamic One, I've heard tons of people say, oh, I sniffed out Dynamic One, and you know, this result was not. They may have had, like, my Neil Kleinberg, our friend Neil had everything going through Dynamic One. If he hangs on to win, Neil crushes. As it happens, he was smart enough to back wheel Dynamic One with everybody.
Ooh,
so at least he got, he got the $900 exacta, and so he got something. But it did feel like there were a lot of people that needed Dynamic One at a robust enough number. That, to me, you know, that's a betting opportunity type that, you know, I completely understood that when Neil told me, God, he didn't want. And Andy Serling yesterday was funny, Pete. He said, maybe Todd was also kind of rooting, considering that he had Vinny Viola and Mike Rapoli in tow.
It is true, the subtle little politics that go on in these trainer routes as well. I got a feel for the Dynamic One people also, just because I feel like he was best, made that move into the fastest part of the race, and then just got pipped by one who fully benefited from the collapse. Just took so long to get going, did Bourbonnais. But at least to have the sense to catch that exacta and get the money back that way. What did it pay? A cool $400 for a buck? Wasn't that all?
More? No, it was. And in fact, people were complaining that it didn't pay enough. That they thought that they got kind of shortchanged. And frankly, whether it was people that just, you know, sort of latched onto a Pletcher exacta, or there's people that, you know, I'm sure there's people that bet Kendrick. Then there's the algorithms that, you know, that was probing the probables and leveled out the number. I think people kind of felt like 1200 was the right exacta price, and they settled. You're right, actually. You're saying for a buck. Yeah, 453 for a buck and 906 for the 2 bucks.
I did once read a study. I think it was the great handicapping author Dick Mitchell who did an analysis where same connections do depress those multi-exotic payoffs, whether it's exactas or double, same rider, same trainer. You can take off a percentage of it. So I could see how that would get chiseled compared to the raw math of what it should be on there on their win prices, but I still feel like it's tough. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but after the race, it's tough to complain about that number for the Pletcher exacta in the wood.
Well, and plus, you know, the other thing, we usually talk about this kind of thing more at Saratoga than Aqueduct per se, but, you know, there's also the small, you know, the small saddle cloth number phenomenon where, you know, this is a 3.5, and, you know, the 3.5 will always pay less than the, you know, 9.12.
Although March 5th birthday is out there.
Exactly. And street address stuff, and you know, it is. We typically we think of that at Saratoga, though. That's you know, that was like, who was the horse, Pete, a few years ago that Jason and Andy would laugh about? Was it Uncle Joe that would always get overbet because everybody's got an Uncle Joe?
Who doesn't have an Uncle Joe? That reminds me of the late Ralph Kinchin, JK's father. That was his. JK was introduced to the game through his betting system, which was to play their address in the various games. So it definitely is a thing.
That's great. Now, I certainly at this juncture, you know, you get the weather improving and you know, spirits lifting in general. And, you know, then we talk about, you know, introduce this with the vaccine news that continues to be positive. So it just everybody's spirits, I think, lifted by the time of year and the racing and, you know, the contest scene. Of course, there's live venues that are perking up, including Lone Star. Brandon Lee in his series that goes into May. So there's really countless things to be excited about. And that includes the news I saw from you the other day with a Breeders' Cup opportunity.
This is a fun one. And it is for anybody who has any interest in contests because it's such a low buy-in. I'm glad you mentioned Lone Star. That series is definitely worth paying attention to. Memorial Day weekend, they've got three contests. Great opportunity to travel there. This weekend, of course, Grade One Gamble at Keeneland, opportunity to play that online. Those are bigger money events. We are debuting. Last year we did the Horse Players Happy Hour, started early days of the pandemic and basically went straight through the Breeders' Cup. It's back, and this time we're turning it into an interconnected series, the Horse Players Happy Hour Tour, $20 a week. The VIG gets donated to charity. The beneficiaries will be the TAA and the TRF, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I heard Kim Weir on your airwaves yesterday, Steve, talking about the new farm outside of Louisville and all the great work that they did. So the money, the VIG, such as it is, goes to great causes. But what's really cool is we are adding two Breeders' Cup betting challenge seats to the pot, essentially, thus giving players three ways of winning their way into the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. You can follow the traditional route, which is you play in the $20 feeder, you win into the qualifier at the weekend, and you qualify for the BCBC. We also are going to have a tour, essentially. We take the eight top scores throughout the 20-week season, and that's your tour score. Very simple. 10 points for a first, down to 1 point for a 10th, rotisserie baseball scoring, if you will. The person who has the highest total will win a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat. And then we're also having sort of a playoffs, if you will. The top two finishers every week automatically qualify for these playoffs, as do the next, the 40 highest tour scores that haven't already qualified will also advance. So the last few weeks, we're going to basically have an 80-person tournament for a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat that we're going to do cut lines. So 80 the first week down to 40, 40 down to 20, 20 down to 10, and that 10 are going to play in a final table format live on the last episode. It's going to be a ton of fun. Again, the only money that comes out goes to charity, and with 20,000 added, it's a really good deal, and it's going to be fun. We'll have live streams every week. The first one is this week, tomorrow, Thursday, at 3 o'clock. We want everybody to join in. If you go to horseplayers.com, You can find all the information. If you have any questions, hit me up at Looms Boldly or through the contact page over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Happy to answer any questions and follow this thing throughout. We start off with a marathon session. We're doing 2+ hours tomorrow live. We'll be covering races and following the tournament and having fun, previewing the weekend, talking derby, all that exciting stuff. And it all kicks off this Thursday.
That's a huge value too. I mean, just with that kind of a head count, the opportunity, you know, and for those that aren't aware and those that have never ventured into the BCBC side of things, it's a $10,000 package. I mean, so it sounds too good to miss.
Excellent. I'm glad you think so, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of at the races leaderboard names on the leaderboard and chances to give shout outs to the players. I want it to be really interactive this year. We did the shows last year and it sort of evolved throughout the year, but my hope is to have it be really fun, being able to go back and forth with the audience and talk about the races as they're going on, find a few winners along the way, and then also be able to highlight the horse players themselves by following the tour leaderboard, having a chance to have people on the show and highlight their stories. Is something else you do such a good job of, Steve, is featuring horse players as stars in this game, you know, in their own right, alongside the traditional human athletes and equine athletes that make the game so great. Horse players deserve to have a spotlight shown on them once in a while, and we think this is going to be a great vehicle to do just that.
Very cool. Give everybody the coordinates so they can, you know, be sure to latch on.
If you go to horseplayers.com, you can find the tournament there. I'll send out a tweet and tag you, Steve, with the entry into this specific game. If you don't mind sending that around, that'd be super helpful. And then folks who find us on Twitter can just click right in and go. But if you're not a Twitter person and you just go to horseplayers.com and look for Horse Player Happy Hour, just go to tomorrow's slate of games, and you can't miss it.
Excellent. Well done, and we'll look forward to it. And since you did mention, some of the qualifiers and some of the contest play, I gotta get in. It's Wednesday, so we'll hearken back to contest congratulations, Nick Tamaro and Andrew Osborne. On the Naira Betts Wood Memorial Challenge, and Tony Joe actually had won and beat Nick in the last race, but he opted for the other prize package, and so Nick, who is going to miss August this year and miss NHC this year, he just, you know, with the new baby last year, he just did not really get a chance to, you know, to do his usual assault to, you know, garner a seat or two. But Nick is set for next February, or actually it's going to be the last weekend in January in Vegas. And Andrew Osborne on Express Bet, Chris Larmy, who qualified for, I think, the 37th time, maybe, give or take.
He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason.
I guess so. Chris and Paul Hughes got seats this weekend. And at Horse Players, Dan Piazza, Stu Cantor, Albion Benton, and Mark Infante. Those are your eight qualifiers this past weekend for NHC.
That's great. Great to hear Albion Benton. Remember him? He was the day one leader. I think now it was the years all blend, Steve, but in the last few years, and he had that great story about working multiple jobs and grinding away and trying to find time to play, and he went on that great run. Yeah, that's a cool one to have up there. And this, I mean, it's going to be great to have this year's NHC in some form in August, but I do think, for me, I'm just incredibly looking forward to the one in January for this year. I just think that's going to be, I always say about that event, there's many things I like about it. One of the things I really like about it is that it's the coolest horse player party we got going. And I think it's going to have I'm sure it'll be great to be out there in August, but a lot of people are going to be not able to go or playing by proxy, et cetera, to be able to do it when we can, you know, hopefully all be in the same room again. I can't wait. That's going to be so much fun. Hopefully we can do some more broadcasting for that event. It's always a great time.
Well, and it's funny because Tina and I are trying to figure out, I can't flight, not able to book the flights yet. Another couple of weeks, I think. I've got a ton of credit left on Southwest from last year and having to cancel everything March and April.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to, we got a couple of things going on. We also had bought a vacation in Mexico for a week. This at the captain benefit that, you know, that I was the MC for. And so we bought one of those charitable vacation things and as a fundraising mechanism. So we went, you know, we had it booked, obviously, and that got scuttled because of COVID last year. We had bought it in 19 to then travel in 20. So then we rebooked it for December, but then we even canceled that because there's going to be a second grandchild. So that got canceled. So we were even toying with maybe, you know, going a week in August before Vegas. I'm trying to figure this all out, and that doesn't work because they're booked. So that left us with, well, then let's go to Del Mar. I've only ever been to Del Mar. In November. I haven't really been there for the summer meet. So I think
it's
we're
a
gonna
different vibe too.
Right? Yeah. I think we're gonna do that the weekend before Vegas.
That's, you know, a good idea.
Right? And then go from San Diego to Vegas for the broadcast the week of
Yeah, that's an easy jaunt. That's a really good idea. I love it. I I'm pained by the idea of ever missing a Saratoga weekend, which is probably why I will stay put, but I think that's a very clever idea to combine Del Mar, which is such a great experience in its own right. And I actually, there's really something to be said for that drive across the desert. It's really fun. I did it with Leo once after the NHC. We did the drive back out, and you knew the spots to stop and eat. And just seeing that, you know, for me, a thorough, you know, Eastern boy city guy,
sure,
just driving through the desert itself was like, is, you know, a memorable tourist attraction. So I highly recommend that plan. Any excuse to get out to Del Mar. And then, of course, you know, I think it's going to be great. It's going to be great to have an NHC and feel like we're getting back on track.
I'm with you. I mean, obviously, we're going to miss, you know, whatever it's going to be, 10 days maybe in August, but to be honest, I've gotten pretty practiced at missing tracts of Saratoga between the eye fiasco, between the detached retina
right.
fiasco in 2019, and then last year, which you know, even being able to go to the track was there was nothing. You know, I'm sure people thought, oh, they get to go. There was nothing pleasant about being there. It was more depressing and deflating than it was exhilarating, believe me.
To go and suspected that and just, you know, stayed in the home office. I was thrilled that it was on, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I didn't feel like you needed to be there last year the way that it's going to be in the near future. So yeah, that's the thing. It's there. I always say that one year, and I don't know that I'll ever do it, but I always say one year I'm going to skip summer here and do all the great European meets and, you know, all the things. I've never been to Glorious Goodwood. I've never been to York in August, never been to Galway, never been to Deauville, all these things. And it'd be fun to just, like, if I could get to a point in my life where I could just stack them all up and have like this amazing adventure summer, maybe even be able to write a book about it. Who knows? And it's, from here, it seems so painful to miss, but then you get these other amazing experiences, and Saratoga will be there. It'll be there for you when you get back.
That's true. No, fair point. And in general, I certainly don't want to. I don't want to give the impression that. I've had enough. I've imbibed enough of Saratoga, you know, that I'm tired. None of us get tired of it. But, you know, at the same time, I'll say this. The expansion over the years, Pete, from, you know, from the 4 weeks to 5 weeks and to now virtually 7 weeks, it does, it has made it easier, you know, my return to Monmouth. I've that's early in Saratoga. I don't feel like I'm missing something at Saratoga if I go spend four or five days in Oceanport.
Makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it's the logical thing, and I'm not complaining about the expansion of the meet the way it's been done, but it does make it less heart-wrenching to miss a weekend or three. You miss 3 weekends, you still get as many weekends as people used to have there. So
it's
just got to choose your spots, you know, and make it work. And Monmouth, that's another place. I'm glad you called out. I'm looking forward to getting back there, hopefully for the Pick Your Prize contest, which sounds like it's going to be the week after Belmont. And I'm pumped. That is an underrated facility. A beautiful summer day. I think you can hold it up against almost anyone.
No, it's the greatest. I've said this. I mean, people have heard me say it forever. It was the first racetrack that I got to attend, like on a regular basis when I lived in Briel, and that summer, and I was there. I think I lived there for about 8 months, and 9 months maybe. And it coincided with the summer season. And so, you know, I could go, and that was even when if I'm not mistaken, I think they were still first post might've still been 2 o'clock. And so, you know, you would go, you know, fairly late afternoon after you'd done your work, and, you could go catch 5-6 races. And there was nothing better than going over to Monmouth and then heading somewhere anywhere down the shore from there. I mean, I was living on the shore, so it wasn't like it was a foray. But you go for a shore dinner, Manasquan and Seagirt, and it's just so pleasant. Everything right around. I've gotten to know a lot more. In and around Oceanport, over these last 6, 7, 8 years that I've gone back and broadcast from Monmouth. So, yeah, don't shortchange Monmouth on the and this year's Askell. I mean, had people and they managed to pull it off. It wasn't what was ideal, but they had bodies and it made for a fun day.
I'm looking forward to a good season and getting down there once or twice. Love taking the boat down from the city.
That's
always another one of those things where, like, the drive across the desert, I was describing the tourist attraction of doing the ride to and from the track is something in and of its own, right. I definitely recommend that Sea Streak if you're a New Yorker heading down. And I still haven't checked out that restaurant that's supposed to be good right on premise there, that Blue Grotto.
Blue Grotto.
I think has a little outdoor beer garden element. It sounds like something I would enjoy. I haven't gotten a chance to check it out yet, but it will be happening this summer.
Well, I can give you absolute a litany. The food on the shore is
awesome.
Spectacular. The Long Branch, countless places in Long Branch, and just in Monmouth County and everywhere. I mean, just everywhere. Atlantic Beach, I've got places down. It's tremendous. Up in the Highlands, the Atlantic Highlands, there's out of this world. Might as well. And by the way, since we went careening into food, we were in Brooklyn last weekend. And
oh, nice. Where'd you go?
Well, we're there to see Spencer and his roommate from France. It was her birthday, so we're like her adopted parents, and Spencer and there's three of them. There's Spencer, Dan, and Anya. Spencer said to me, I want to take you to this really good place. Monte Sacro?
I've heard of it.
Oh. It's a Roman. Oh, it's unbelievable, Pete. It's a Roman-style pizzeria, and the plates, the pastas are you know, the secondi is fabulous. The appetizers are unbelievable. They do a supli, you know, like an arancini, phenomenal. And they've got this sliding. They've got almost like a natatorium, like a sliding roof that is perfect under the scenario because it's outdoor dining. I was really enchanted, frankly, by these, and I wonder if there's people recording them with film, these outdoor, you know, these palazzos that have propped up that every restaurateur has built on the street. It's crazy.
It is wild. It's such a different scene. And some of them, I mean, I was enduring them during the depths of the cold and dealing with whatever little heat you could get. Now they must have all kinds of crazy vibes. This conversation, Steve, reminding me that at some point your Racetracker's Guide to Dining of all the states where pari-mutuel wagering is allowed has to come into the world at some point.
Well, it's I meant to revisit you on this because this might be something I got Mig tied on, and you would probably be an invaluable contributor. We'll revisit that. I haven't seen you in ages, but. And I hadn't talked to you in ages. That's the Wednesdays have gotten crazy, and you've been busy as can be. What, before we go, what else is new on the network?
We've got so much fun stuff happening. So big show we're excited about next week. We've got our annual Derby draft. First time we're going to do it with video. That's going to be fun, where various hosts on the network pick their teams of horses to compete for points in the Triple Crown races. My focus is so Derby-related. In terms of new stuff, one that's definitely worth mentioning is Ramon Dominguez has joined the team with his broadcast partner, Jose Francisco Rivera, and they're doing the first Spanish-language show on the network called Exacta Box. So if you've got, if you're a Spanish-language speaker or have one in your life who likes racing, definitely tell them to go to iTunes and check out Exacta Box with Ramon and Jose Francisco. We're really pumped about that. It's not quite ready to debut, but you mentioned it before. We've got Nick Tamaro percolating on a new project as well. I guess the biggest change on the network or in the company in general since last we spoke is we've been releasing a lot of free daily handicapping analysis. So if you go to inthemoneypodcast.com and poke around in the blog section, you'll see write-ups for a lot of tracks going. Just something that's been a lot of fun. We got some good people on there, and just another way to try to become a hub for horse players, basically. Another place, not unlike SteveBick.com, where folks can go and get great information and get connected to other horse players in this game.
Pete, sounds great, and this was overdue to catch up, and we'll convene before Derby too.
Love it. Perfect timing. Great to hear your voice and get to have a conversation we wanted to have anyway. And if you need a guest, you know where to find me. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly, and everything going on at the In the Money Players podcast, and this exciting opportunity for BCBC seats. Get involved in this series. This will be when Pete sends the tweet out, I'll retweet it. Let's take the top of the hour break, and that treat that I was hoping for, we're going to have it when we come back. It just so happens that April 7th today, 1970.